Doug.
It's good to see you.
Thank you. It's good to see you. I want to email you and set up a time to do some work with you for some coaching, some guidance and meditation.
Okay.
You do that, right?
I do.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Well, I'm really interested in that. So I have some questions, and my teachers have been through you and Robert and online podcasts, so I could really use an in-person some conversations about things that I'm wondering about.
Sure. Okay.
Yeah. I'll email you. I'm going to Southern Oregon tomorrow to visit a friend in hospice. I'll be back on Monday, and I'll email you when I get back.
Okay.
And we can find a time.
Okay.
Yeah. Great.
Sounds good. Yeah.
Good.
Looks like there's some other folks that are just joining. So let's see, get that set up. So is the sound working okay?
It is for me. I have earphones in, but I can hear you just fine.
Good. Thanks. Okay. So just as we start to get kind of together here, I'd like to welcome all of you folks, and just for identification for Facebook and for the podcast, this is Heart of Freedom, and I'm Doug Pullen, and it's a pleasure to have this opportunity to share Dharma teachings and practice with you this evening. And so just an invitation to get settled, get comfortable, and we'll be getting started in just a minute or two. So it's time to get settled, and if it's helpful to just to check in with your body to see if there's any adjustments or additional like pillows or blankets or anything that could make meditation more comfortable. Trying to take care of ourselves this evening, make sure that we have what we need, and to check in both externally and internally with your space and with your body. And sometimes as I'm getting settled, I find it helpful to bring the focus into just finding a kind of balanced position that supports being alert, being awake. And that can include just letting the body sway back and forth a little bit or front to back. And so just getting in touch with where the balance might be. It's helpful to intentionally let our eyes close so we can really bring the focus in. and to, yeah, feel from the inside what's happening. Checking in, if there's any places where there could be some tightness or holding your tension, residual stress. And see if it's possible just through noticing and bringing attention to bring some softening, just allow things to soften. Attending to places like neck and shoulders, or perhaps the face or chest and belly, be places where we tend to hold on to tension, constriction. And this isn't about trying to force anything. It's not trying to make it let go. It's more through the healing power of awareness, being present and open, that we just allow things to release. A lot of times it's pent up or bottled energy that hasn't really been attended to. So we can bring some TLC, some tender loving care to these bodies that do so much for us. To see if there's any constriction or kind of any impediments to the breath. And if you're noticing any constriction or tension, it could be helpful to take a long, slow, deep breath, or maybe a couple of those. And deepening into the physical experience of the breath can help us connect more deeply with the present moment. And it also invites relaxation, helps things soften and just attending to those sensations of breathing. And to connect with the deepest part of us that is the truest refuge that's here in the present moment. Sometimes referred to as our Buddha nature, that capacity to be awake, to be present. And underneath all of the distraction and conditioning, it's here. It's this moment, this experience of being awake, being alert. So the invitation is to take refuge in that experience, to keep coming back to this moment, this experience. And to take refuge in the direct experience of the truth that we discover. It's beyond concepts and ideas and belief systems. That's taking refuge in the Dharma. And to take refuge in our interconnectedness. It's beyond concepts and ideas. We inter are. We're inexorably intertwined, and to experience the support of Sangha, of community. It's often referred to as taking refuge in Sangha. And so it's simple. It's taking this breath as a focal point for the cultivation of this practice, And it's just letting the breath be free, just letting the breath breathe itself. And trusting that if we keep coming back and staying present, that the fruits of the practice will reveal themselves. each experience of coming back to the breath when the mind goes off is an incredibly powerful yet subtle intervention. It's training the mind to remember that what we seek is only found here in this moment, with this breath, with this experience of being being alive, being fully alive, regardless of what the feelings are, regardless of whether there's pain or pleasantness. So it's just the invitation to be here with the way things are. And it creates a potent, powerful presence, which is transformative. Each time we return to the breath, this experience of the chest expanding, contracting, the touch of the breath, the tip of the nostrils. there's a certain faith or trust that the things that we seek from meditation are only found in the present moment. And so even if the mind is wandering off, there's a sense of relaxation and trust that if we stay with it, if we come back to this breath, then eventually the mind will settle. We find a place of balance. And to stay in touch with the embodied experience of breathing is such a wonderful tool in our awakening. Is if the breath is tense or constricted, then that could mean that we're trying too hard to hold on to the breath. And so there needs to be more ease, more relaxation, softening. And on the other hand, if the mind is just spinning out and it's lost in diffusion, then perhaps a little bit more energy or effort is needed as the breath is always here beckoning us back to this moment, present with things when they're like this. So see if it's possible to truly surrender to this capacity to be awake, to this quality of love that's bigger than any state of mind or body. It's the consciousness where there's room for everything. With this breath, with these body sensations, it could be simplified by simply saying yes, this too, whether it's painful or pleasant, whether it's what you expect or perhaps think meditation should be or not. It's just allowing it to be as it is in this moment, with this breath. Just be present with what's happening in this moment. It isn't the same, perhaps, as focused informal meditation, but we can notice the perhaps the desire to shift or stretch or adjust, and just be present with that. Stay with the body. See if it's possible to keep that thread of presence and sense of knowing what the most predominant object is. If it isn't the breath, what's happening? And of course, if we get pulled into discursive thought, there's always this body sitting, or perhaps the most predominant sensation to invite us back. And I'd like to share a few pieces of information that might be interesting or useful. There are quite a lot of offerings at PIMC, so I'm just going to mention things briefly and invite you to go to the PIMC website to get more information. Coming up on the 16th of December, there's a winter solstice meditation and movement with Phyllis Moses and Candle Summers. That's from 10 to 4 at PIMC. There's Sunday Insight and Metta. That's on the 17th from 6:30 to 8:30. That's on Zoom with Candle Summers. Actually, there's a guest teacher, Aplish Parikh, is teaching. Coming up on the 21st of December, I'm going to be offering Heart of Freedom for Solstice as both in person and on Zoom and Facebook. So that'll be a 7 o'clock start time as opposed to our usual 7:30. So that's coming up in a couple of weeks. And then there's a 2-day commuter retreat with Trina Tron. That's coming up on December 22nd and 23rd. That's from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. So just a few things coming up at PIMC. Check the website because there's more to look at there. Also, I just invite you to look at our chat. And I've included there just a reminder about the practice of Dana, which is one of the core practices that is how we support the teachings in the center. There's this invitation to experience the joy of giving and see the results. See the benefits and experience that. So there's that. There's some other information there that you can check out. So this evening, I'd like to give us an opportunity to kind of take the spiritual, emotional temperature of the group. It's totally optional, but it's nice to hear a few words about what's most alive for you this evening. And just some reminders for the structure of it. It's very simple. If you'd like to speak, please unmute yourself and just say your name and what's most kind of important in the present moment to share. And then when you're finished, to just say, I've spoken, so that lets the next person know that they could take a turn. So I'll get us started. My name is Doug. And it's such a pleasure to be here with you. I'm feeling the preciousness of life this evening. I shared last week that my mom is in hospice. She just started this week, actually. And I'm just really in touch with the preciousness of life, of each breath. So thanks. Thank you for being a part of my spiritual support system. And I have spoken.
My name is Shane, and I am mostly delighted to be with this group this Thursday evening. I don't get the opportunity to attend Doug's classes on Thursdays that much these days because of conflicting schedules and life and family obligations, so it's very nice to be here. Having said that, I'm also sort of feeling a little fatigued, even though it's not quite the end of the week. It's getting kind of close, and it's been a long one. So I think that's what's going on as well, and I have spoken.
I'm Matthew, and I just wanted to let you know I'm grateful, Doug, for you leading this and leading this for so many years. I've been coming for several years. I just haven't been coming very consistently. But it has always been on my mind every Thursday evening, regardless. And it's whether I'm here or not, it's a really wonderful thing to know that I feel a part of something like this, where it's kind of like a, I don't know, like a lighthouse or something that I know is kind of there out there on Thursday evenings. And I've also had the opportunity to sit in the mornings with Trina for waking up together, and they are they're really wonderful places to be, and it's helped me a lot. And when you were talking about seeking, and you were talking about this idea of, you know, I interpret it as questioning, well, maybe all of this seeking that I've been doing in my life and trying to find it elsewhere and other things and other people and other places are actually what I'm seeking is actually this moment, and it is waking up to this moment. And that, I've heard that a billion times, but tonight it just hit me, and it hit me square in the eyes. So thank you very much. Thanks, everyone. I've spoken to Matthew.
Hi, I'm Esme. I just want to share I'm experiencing some profound gratitude tonight because Mel and my daughter is flying home from college. She's a freshman at UNLV, and she's alive after the shooting that occurred there yesterday. And I often feel like the world is so malevolent and hostile. But tonight my daughter is alive and will walk in this door in an hour or two. Mm-hmm. There's so much gratitude there. Mm-hmm. Thank you, I've spoken.
This is Charlene, and I want to say, first of all, Doug, that I've really been thinking about you and your mother and your situation, and marveling that you're going on with all this, given that. And it's somewhat unusual for me to get beyond my own immediate thought processes to people beyond me. So I don't know you very well, but I've really been thinking about you, and my heart is with you. So I want to let you know that. And I also want to say, kind of a little bit to Matthew's point, I feel like lately I've just been kind of going through the motions in terms of all this Buddhism stuff. And, you know, I don't know what to read. Should I go on this retreat or that retreat? Whatever. And I feel like all of a sudden it's starting to sink in. Like maybe I'm just finally slowing down enough for those moments of silence and stillness to get in and give me the kinds of insights, and just the kind of, if I just lived right here and wasn't always running around the way I do, that this is just what I'm seeking. So I'm not sure if I put that very well, but yeah, just these last couple of days, it feels like something's seeping in. And that's why I'm here, because I really felt like I was getting something from you, Dex, and from all of you. And it's nice to see some of you back from last week. So that's all I wanted to say, and I have spoken. Thank you.
So just a gentle check-in. Anybody just on the edge of jumping in? Okay. So I'd like to go ahead and share the Dharma talk, and it'll probably be finished in time for us to kind of circle back and check back in. So if there's something that comes up for you and you feel like it would be important to share with the group, there might be some time towards the end. And the Dharma talk this evening is part of a series that I started last week on the five spiritual powers. And so last week we talked about faith. And this week we'll be talking about the practice of effort, or skillful effort. And it's a spiritual power when cultivated or developed, because it's transformative, really. I'd like to start kind of diving into the deep end of the pool. And then I'll kind of circle back and cover some other pieces here, but just invite you to listen to hear what reminds you of what you already know is true. So rather than trying to listen to learn something intellectually, to try to listen from your heart to what resonates beyond kind of thinking that that actually reminds you of your direct experience, the direct knowing of things. So this is a quote from Nisargadatta Maharaj. Jack Kornfield practiced with him some in India and described him as the most selfless person that he'd ever met. So that's quite a spiritual endorsement. And Nisargadatta said, "What truth or reality can we gain by all of our practice? Nothing whatsoever, of course. But it is the nature of truth or love, cosmic consciousness, whatever you want to call it, to express itself, to affirm itself, to overcome difficulties. Once you've understood that the world is love in action, consciousness or love in action, you will look at it quite differently. But first, your attitude towards suffering must change. Suffering is primarily a call for attention, which itself is a movement of love. More than happiness, love wants growth, the widening and deepening of awareness and consciousness and being. Whatever prevents that becomes a cause of pain, and love doesn't shirk from pain." So, and for those of you who are on the email list, that quote is there in the email that I sent out this week. So, and I find that really an amazing thing that he said. He said, "Love doesn't shirk from pain. What love wants is and isn't pleasure, that there's something deeper or higher or richer. And that is our capacity, it's our birthright, it's our deepest need." So, and that's what actually is underneath effort. Spiritual effort is really love wanting to wake up to itself. This capacity to be awake, to discover our true nature. And it's here in each moment. There's a poem by Jennifer Wellwood, which I think kind of expresses this in a kind of more day-to-day kind of fashion, and it's called Unconditional. She says, "Willing to experience aloneness, I discover connection everywhere. Turning to face my fear, I meet the warrior who lives within. Opening to my loss, I gain the embrace of the universe. Surrendering into emptiness, I find fullness without end. Each condition I flee from pursues me. Each condition I welcome transforms me and becomes itself transformed into its radiant jewel-like essence." That's Unconditional by Jennifer Wellwood. The great Indian master Ramana Maharshi, certainly one of the greatest in the last century or so, said, "Enlightenment isn't your birthright. Those who succeed only do so through proper effort." And so this evening I'd like to speak to what is proper effort. The Buddha said, that there's an ardency. There's a quality of heart that he referred to as ardency. And if you read the Satipatthana Sutta, the four foundations or domains of mindfulness practice, in that language, as it translates into English, you find this word ardent as a practice of attending to the body, to feelings, to consciousness, to mental objects, which are the four foundations. And so I looked up the word ardent. It isn't a word that I use often to see what it actually means. And this is the Webster's Dictionary explanation. Expressing or characterized by warmth of feeling, passionate, displaying or characterized by strong enthusiasm, devotion, fervent, impassioned, burning, fiery, shining. So it isn't a sort of passive, sort of calm thing. There's this energy. There's this enthusiasm. In another sutta, the Buddha talked about practicing like your hair is on fire. That there's at a certain point, something takes hold, and there's this energy. There's this passion that propels us to practice. Sometimes it comes slowly, and if we stick with it, we have enough faith, and there's enough support, that we get there. For some people, it comes quickly and powerfully. And there isn't any predicting, and I can't really say I understand the reasons, but it does come differently for different people. But it's the energy that propels us to practice. What brings us here on Thursday evening? What brings us to our meditation cushion? That's the energy. That's the effort. There's another poem. This is a Kabir poem that I think speaks to this energy. Kabir said, "Friend, hope for the guest while you are alive. Jump into experience while you are alive. Think and think while you are alive. What you call salvation belongs to the time before death. If you don't break your ropes while you are alive, do you think the ghosts will do it after? The idea that the soul will join with the ecstatic just because the body is rotten, that is all fantasy. What is found now is found then. If you find nothing now, you will simply end up with an apartment in the city of death. If you make love with the divine now, in the next life you will have the face of satisfied desire." So plunge into the truth. Find out who the teacher is. Believe in the great sound. Kabir says this: when the guest is being searched for, it's the intensity of the longing for the guest that does all of the work. Look at me and you will see a slave of that intensity. There's this quality of intensity. And yet at the same time, spiritual effort is also balanced. Because if we tense up and we try too hard, then that doesn't work either. So it's learning to channel that energy in a direction that's constructive, that's helpful. So on the one hand, effort is needed. The effort to be mindful, to bring the mind back when it wanders. And on the other hand, there's nothing to do. because awareness is already present. It's just that we're distracted. We don't have to create awareness. It's more deepening into what's already here. So, and striving leads to clinging. It reinforces a sense of self, and that could be very painful. So this skillful effort isn't trying to get anything, because there's nothing to get. It's not trying to go deeper and deeper. It's actually the effort to listen with greater sensitivity. It's a soft receptivity. It's a total surrender to receiving and welcoming whatever is here. And when it's balanced without straying, there isn't any sense of, I should do this. There's just a willingness to be present. And that is the nature of love, really. That's what Nisargadatta was talking about. It's, coming back home. There's this balancing between trying too hard and not trying hard enough. And the Buddha was teaching a student who asked the question, so can you give me a simple description of skillful effort? And the student's name was, the monk's name was Sona. And he said, Sona, so if you're tuning a stringed instrument, if you tighten it too much, the string will break. But if it's too loose, it won't carry the tune. So it's that kind of art, that kind of balancing, that kind of tuning to find the balance point. So to know what's happening in the present moment, but without straining, without tensing up. And it takes a lot of practice, just like playing a musical instrument takes practice, to find that balance point. For we are aligned with the way things are. We're in the flow of things. And the breath is our touchstone for getting in touch with the flow of energy. It's the energy of the universe that's part of this body, because the body isn't separate. So we use that as our access route, really. So there's a focus on being present so that we can reconnect with what's already here rather than trying to create something. And the Buddha emphasized the quality of effort significantly in his teaching. The word in Pali for effort or energy is virya. That's V-I-R-I-Y-A. And in the Buddhist teaching, it's used more than any other word. It's used more than wisdom, more than nibbana, more than compassion, more than loving kindness. It's so there was quite an emphasis on it, the important aspect of it. And the Buddha's last words, all conditioned things are impermanent. Work out your liberation with diligence. He didn't say, build altars and shrines to me and worship me. He said, practice. Uh, And so that's the nature of our practice, is really finding that balance. And there's certain conditions that seem to help us remember. There's the classic story of the Buddha, and to some extent we all are awakened through these conditions that the Buddha was awoken by. The Buddha was protected and infantilized by his father, the king. But when he was a young man, with his charioteer, he went out into the world. And he hears a description. When I saw that I would become old, I lost the arrogance of youth. When I saw that I would become sick, I lost the arrogance of the healthy. When I saw that I would die, I lost the arrogance of the living. There's something profoundly compelling that's energizing. It's like this life is so fleeting. And the older I get, the quicker things seem to change. So there's this kind of energy and intensity. And there starts to be a shift from the conditioned tendency to cling to the pleasant, resist the unpleasant, and try to make an easy life, to see the challenges and the difficulties as opportunities for awakening. So instead of clinging to pleasure, there's more a kind of wanting to open to truth. And there is a joy and a freedom in that that isn't of the senses, that it's not based on sense pleasure. It's based on the joy and peace that comes from freedom. Sometimes the Buddha would describe person who is the worldling, who wasn't on the path of awakening, like a child in a house that's on fire playing with toys. We see that both in our external world. There's lots of playing with toys going on while the world burns. And so there's an invitation for us to take these conditions that we find ourselves in as a motivation, not as something to be frozen by or kind of in despair about, but an opportunity. We don't know what the outcome is going to be. But there's certainly powerful opportunities for awakening. The more suffering there is, the more opportunity for the awakening of compassion and for understanding, our true nature. The Buddha talked about there being four great efforts, skillful efforts. And so I just want to mention these as reminders this evening. I always find it helpful to kind of circle back over these. The first is the effort to abandon or overcome entrenched patterns of behavior that don't serve us anymore. We're creatures of habit. Our brains are repositories of conditioning. And that could be a good thing. There's some good habits, healthy habits, brushing teeth, getting exercise, you know, doing things that care for ourselves and others. But there's also things that aren't helpful that we engage in. Habitual patterns of thinking, action, addictions, being lost in stories about the past that are not helpful, being lost in imagined futures can be habitual patterns that lead to anxiety or depression. Self-criticism can be a pattern. There's tons of examples. To awaken to those gives us an opportunity to free ourselves from them. That we don't have to continue to be the victims of our conditioning, that we can make a different choice through a kind, loving awareness and effort. And then the second of the four great efforts is the effort to stay away from or not engage in things that aren't helpful. Not to put oneself in dangerous situations. People who are in recovery from various things, staying away from high-risk situations. There's the example of someone who's recovering from alcoholism, not going to the bar to be friends. That would be a kind of a simple example. About 15 years ago, I discovered that I was starting to get addicted to surfing the internet and reading stories. And if I did it, particularly after a certain point in the evening, it was hard to stop. And then I'd stay up too late, and then I would be exhausted the next day. So for me, being on the computer after 9 o'clock or 9:30 in the evening is not a good thing. So, and plus it makes it harder to go to sleep. So I don't do that. Just noticing what it is that would be helpful to stay away from. And then the third of the great efforts is the effort to initiate, to develop, to cultivate the Brahmavihara practices, cultivating loving kindness, compassion, sympathetic joy, or altruistic joy. And equanimity would be examples. Generosity, if there is a generous thought that passes through the mind, to act on it if it's skillful, to give up intense emotional attachments and compulsive preoccupations, to practice honesty, patience. Those are just some examples. And then the fourth of the great efforts is the effort to maintain what's skillful, what's in accordance with our deepest values and beliefs. Not giving up things that are good to continue. Like once we establish a meditation practice, for example, sticking with it, even if it's difficult. Yeah. So I'm going to transition here because I want to leave a little time for check-in. Nobody can tell you what right effort is for you. What I can tell you is that it's only found through direct experience. It's found through discovering for yourself what leads to balance and freedom and becoming more loving and kind So those are some guidelines. And then I'll close here with a quote from Bodhidharma, who was a great Buddhist teacher in the past. If you use your mind to try and understand reality, you will understand neither your mind nor reality. If you try and understand reality without using your mind, you will understand both your mind and reality. That's the effort, ultimately. So, just to check back, anything get stirred up or questions or sharing?
This is Rita. Doug, could you say a little bit about the fine-tuning where we don't work too hard and we're not too relaxed? I know that there are some teachings that say just stay with the breath, just notice what happens, don't identify. There are other teachings that say it is your responsibility to do more than watch, but your responsibility to train your mind, to choose skillful thoughts, to choose skillful emotions. So what is that, I guess the question is, how does one go about finding that right balance?
Yeah. Well, if we stay with the breath, and it leads to deep states of peace and freedom. And so we're experiencing the fruits of practice. Then that's skillful. That works. But for many of us, when we start to get quiet, what we discover is that there are aspects of our conditioning that keep pulling us back in, that we pull us out of the present. And so if that's the case, then it's skillful to turn towards those things. So there's a fork in the road, you could say, and it's sometimes referred to as skillful means. So which practices are going to be the most helpful in experiencing more peace and freedom and love, open-heartedness? And for a lot of us, there are unresolved issues from the past, psychological, emotional issues, that my teacher, Matt Flickstein, refers to them as like bungee cords that keep pulling us back into resentment or grief or, unresolved psychological issues. And so wholesome emotional cultivation like compassion cultivation or forgiveness practice or equanimity practice cultivation can be incredibly helpful. Skillful. And I would say that the majority of us come to practice with unresolved psychological, emotional issues. So those things are really helpful. Does that get close to answering your question?
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense because it's the focus is on quieting and peaceful and equanimity, and so when that's not happening, it is time to pay attention to what is happening and then skillfully work with that to move it. which eventually it does move on its own, but that is helpful. Thank you.
Welcome. So there's a guided reflection that could be helpful. We might have time here, but I want to make sure that there's a chance for anybody who wants to share something or ask a question before I do that. Anything else? Okay. So these are questions that could be helpful to hear mindfully and with a open heart, with mindful listening, to notice if there's any judgment or negative self-talk or criticism that runs through the mind, and just note that and let it go. So this isn't about that. This is about just looking clearly to see and to discover what comes up. So with that, yeah, just centering in the present moment with the breath, with and then noticing hearing and comprehension. So where, if any place in your life, are you trying too hard? Or you're struggling? Maybe against the flow of nature or life itself. And just noticing what comes up, how it feels in your body. Now, shifting to reflect on, is there any place in your life where you could benefit from making more effort to be awake, to be present? Any kind of nooks and crannies unexplored that could be potential for helping free you up, and just noticing what comes up. Mm-hmm. And then another question that could be helpful. Is there any place in your life where you're too internal, where there's a sense of pulling back or shying away, not letting your light shine? Just noticing what comes up. Then to reflect on where is life perhaps too external, not enough time for self-reflection, listening to your own heart, to your deepest needs, Yeah, just noticing what comes up. And finally recognizing and appreciating the efforts that are skillful that you do make to appreciate your practice, your awakening, to be aware of the fruits of your practice and appreciate that. So let's bring this reflection on effort to a close here, and I'd like to invite us to do a practice, a closing practice, which is a form of right effort, a practice to cultivate and strengthen a quality of love through metta practice. And perhaps it naturally flows from the reflection that we just did. What would you like to wish for yourself that is loving and kind and wise? It could be in the form of an image or a sound or a felt sense. It could be some simple words like, may I accept myself just as I am. Or may I give myself the gift of peace and silence on a daily basis. Or whatever it is that your heart longs for, planting those seeds with loving intention in this moment. And that could be done through sustained focus, at least for a minute or two here, and a repetition, perhaps, planting those seeds and noticing how it feels. And sometimes there's a warmth or an opening or a tingling, and sometimes there isn't anything, but we can still practice knowing that we're planting seeds here in this moment. And this practice of metta with a skillful effort is an illimitable practice, which means that there's no bounds, ultimately, and no limits to how much it can be strengthened and cultivated. And so I just invite us to extend it, expand it to whatever degree we're able to dear ones, loved ones, friends, family, wishing these ones well. Yeah, may they be safe, may they be protected, knowing that life being what it is, there's a lot of things we don't have control over. So wishing for them safety, peace, and happiness. And extending these wishes out in all directions to beings who are known to us and beings who are unknown, to places in the world where there's such incredible pain and suffering beyond comprehension, and to all forms of suffering everywhere, may the compassionate relief be felt and received. And having the sense of doing this together, sending our wishes out I'd like to invite us to close with the simple chant, may all beings be happy. And you're welcome to unmute to join me in that. And we can just imagine as we chant that three times that we send it out and maybe imagine it touching hearts and lives around the world. And then we'll close with a chant, Sadhu, which means so be it three times. May all beings be happy. May all beings be happy. May all beings be happy. Sadhu, Sadhu, Sadhu. Thank you for being here. It's a pleasure to share this with you. Please take whatever is useful and continue to practice with it. Anything that's not, just let it go. So you only take good things. And be safe and well, and hopefully I'll see you again next week.
Thank you, Dad.
Welcome.
Thank you,
everybody.
Take care.